Transparency, What's Your Story with Mr. Jean? This podcast takes you through the lives of people who have had transparent moments with life, love, and loss. More importantly, they found their triumph through their tribulations. I'm your host, Mr. Jean. I'm an entrepreneur, singer-songwriter, motivational speaker, but more importantly, I'm happy that you decided to stop by and listen to this episode. Hey, welcome, transparent people. So happy to have you guys back. Today, we discuss mental health and answer some emails and voicemails that you have sent in. Take a listen to the show. Be well. Thank you all for stopping by. So greatly appreciate it. I'm happy you guys are enjoying the podcast. It is my pleasure and privilege to be able to bring you some stories that have been on my heart for a while. More importantly, to inspire more importantly, push you to your next level. If you've not picked up my book, Transparency, 12 Weeks to the New You, it is on Amazon. As well as, if you like interesting stories and articles about health, mental health, physical health, personal training, needing some extra oomph to get you through the day, stop by the AliveExperienceOnline.com. It is a link in my bio. I have over 500 articles about health and fitness, about what you can do. More importantly, if you've not seen the podcast, make your way over there and check out Transparency, What's Your Story. Also, I know some of you all know we do have a telephone number. That's right. If you want to call in and tell me your story, I would really love to hear it. That number is 818-660-5374. Again, 818-660-5374. Thank you guys for your time, and as always, be well. Hey folks, with all the things that are going on in this world today, we seem to have cyberbullying and young kids taking their lives. Is it narcissism? Is the pressure from the household? But we get into some real deep things, and I also answer some viewer voicemails and emails about narcissism, and you walk away from a relationship that you felt no love in. Take a listen, and if you find this something that you would like to respond to, shoot me an email, shoot us a voicemail. More importantly, let your voice be heard. Take a listen. Ladies and gentlemen, on the show today, I have a psychotherapist, counselor, who deals with mental health. She goes by the name of Miss Geraldine Ismay, and she's here to help me break down these questions of mental health. Thank you so much for being on my show.
Thank you for having me.
I really want to break down this topic, and I actually have some questions that I want to ask you, because surprisingly, this has been a major topic that folks have actually written in about on my show. So I'll probably ask you some questions. I'm going to read some of the emails that I've gotten and get your take on what they should do or how they possibly should approach some things. That's what my audience has definitely done. But in the U.S., it seems, well, stats-wise, does it look like the U.S. is getting a handle on mental illness?
That's a great question. I would say the U.S. is doing a good job providing resources. They're shining a light on mental illness, and, you know, the companies and the government and the insurance providers are providing more resources for people regarding mental health. Like, they're beefing up the resources, you can get more mental health services under your insurance that you may not have been able to get maybe 25 years ago or 20 years ago. So I feel like the United States knows that it's an issue, knows that it's growing, and they're doing their part in helping provide resources. But more can be done.
What I seem to be seeing, especially with mental health, that the taboo or the stigmatism of mental health is now having a more of a positive light shining on it, because there's more, I'm going to say, in the middle class communities that are now willing to speak out more about mental health, because with bullying and suicide, that now these things are brought to the forefront. But with, we'll just stick on the topic of just saying, you know, bullying, would that be considered even classifying as a mental health disorder, of somebody having to feel that they have to dominate? I mean, could it be shown that, you know, certain families or histories of abuse could possibly lead into bullying?
I wouldn't say no altogether to that question. I think there's a piece of that that, yeah, it could fall in between the lines of someone who is dealing with inferiority or feeling not confident to, you know, I want in control, to the spectrum of, yeah, I'm still dealing with certain things that have caused, you know, me to act a certain way and I don't know how to handle it. So what I do is I project onto other people and I project that I'm in control and I want to control them. So I don't want to say no. I don't want to say yes. I don't know. I mean, I just feel like, you know, when you think of bullying, the underlying issue with a bully is 9 times out of 10, I don't want to be bullied, so I'm going to bully you. And so it may not be a mental health thing. It may be a fear that was embedded in them as a child from their father or their mom or somebody else. So it's kind of like, you know, this control thing. But yeah, definitely, you can definitely correlate, and there could be some signs of mental health that can tie into bullying. You know, you think of narcissistic personality disorder, you know, when you look that up in the DSM, yeah, those kind of traits you might find in a bully. So,
okay. You just touched on something that I definitely wanted to get on into. Can you break down the term for my show, narcissism? Because I think some people get that mixed up with being a psychopath.
There are some narcissists that are psychopaths, but they are two different things. When you think of a narcissist, you know, you can look it up in a dictionary, and it's like a person who like deems themselves better or have like a great admiration for themselves. It's like an excessive admiration for yourself. I'm trying to tread lightly, because just because you have like high self-esteem and you think highly of yourself does not necessarily mean you're a narcissistic. It means you're confident in yourself, but narcissistic goes beyond just having high self-esteem and thinking highly of yourself and like patting yourself on the back. Narcissism is more excessively feeling like everything revolves around me. Everything is about me. I am the reason the world is turning. I am the reason that you're in this place right now. So it's more so of an excessive feeling, an excessive belief. Very different than someone who's like, you know what, I'm confident in myself. I think I'm pretty great. I like how I look. I'm best basketball player. Just because someone says, you know, well, I'm the best basketball player, or I'm the best football player or tennis player, doesn't mean that they're a narcissist. So it's like this overly excessive, where it becomes possibly a danger to themselves, and it can also affect other people. So it's like this over excessive.
I've heard the term called like the vampire's bite, that you know, those that have been in a narcissistic relationship have just been drained of everything by the time that they leave.
Yeah, that makes sense. I would agree with that. Like, you know, if you're in a relationship with a narcissist, yes, you probably are. You have been sucked dry, because you don't matter, right, in their world. They matter in their world and everybody else's world, because it's about them. So,
okay, how would you, if somebody is say getting out of a narcissistic relationship or needing to walk away from a narcissistic relationship, Would there be any helpful tips that you could offer them through their process of healing?
So you mean like if someone is in a relationship with a person who's a narcissist?
Yes.
I really do believe that when you think of, like, when you're thinking about relationships and relational, relationships, there's a core value in relationships. It's like you're in a relationship with someone because you like them, they like you, you respect them, they respect you. Like, there's this commonality, but there's this, like, equal respect for one another. When you're with a narcissist, you that kind of gets lost in their world because they're narcissistic, and you kind of get pushed to the background. So it can cause, like, a person to feel like, well, I don't matter. It may cause them to do more to try to get that narcissistic person's attention, like, hey, look at me. This is what happened to me today at work. Like, you think about, like, a husband and wife, like, it's a relationship. So it's I don't want to say 50-50, but what I want to say is I meet your needs, and because I'm meeting your needs, you meet my needs. So it's hard when you're in a narcissistic relationship because you're giving and they're always taking. In regards to, like, leaving a relationship like that, the person who's in the relationship with the narcissistic person has to really have enough value for themselves to say, I deserve better, and I deserve to be heard. I deserve, like, I'm more than enough. So this relationship does not validate me or consume me. So I need to now reevaluate it and take a step back. You as a person have to know, like, the signs of, okay, this is draining me. I feel abused. I feel that I'm not heard, or I don't feel valued in this relationship. So they have to have enough sense and self-confidence in themselves to say, okay, if I leave this relationship, will I be able to be okay? Or I know I will be okay because I know this is not how I want to be treated in a relationship. It's like that I could do battle by myself kind of mentality. In regards to tips, mental health is a real thing. It's a real thing, and it's nothing to kind of, like, sweep under the rug. So it's kind of like you don't want to be like, oh, you got mental health issues, you need to go see a therapist and get some meds. This is a person dealing with something really real. Although you are the person in the relationship that needs to kind of maybe walk away, you're not trying to crush somebody else's spirit. You want to be sensitive to the fact that, hey, this person has a problem, and you know what? Maybe being together is not a good thing for us right now.
Which leads me to this question. It was actually sent to me by a listener, and it says, my question is, how do you handle mental illness in your family when you are the in-law and everyone else in the family enables or condones the behavior? Do you suggest you speak up against it, or do you simply walk away?
Yikes. That's tough. That's tough because you're like the odd man out. It's like everybody sees this and they're like, oh, we've been, and you have to understand, like, they've been dealing with, because they could be in consensus that, yes, this behavior is dysfunctional, but they're not going to change. So we're just going to deal with it. Maybe this family feels that way. They may not be saying, yes, we understand, we know, we agree. They may be in consensus that, yeah, this person has mental illness, and the best way we as a family can deal with it is just to enable the behavior. Doesn't make it right. It just makes it what that family can handle. As the in-law who is married into the family, who sees all of this, who's like, oh, this is so dysfunctional. I really hate to say this, but it's kind of like the whole adage of, you got to lose the battle to win the war. I mean, you can't really say this is what you should do, because yeah, you could say something, you could speak up, but then you have to deal with the consequences of standing up and speaking up against an entire family who sees what's going on. They may say to the in-law, like, look, you just got married into this family. You've been dealing with this for years, like, mind your business. Or you could speak up and they can say, you know what? Thank you. You know what, this has been going on for a long time, and, you know, what do you suggest we do? Like, what do you feel needs to change? So it's kind of like a double-edged sword. It could go either way. My thoughts would be, and I don't know if this is the therapist counselor answer, but if it's becoming an issue where it's spilling over into a family or their family in particular, maybe their husband or their wife. I don't know if the in-law is male, female, but if it's spilling over into their situation, then I definitely would say, yeah, you definitely say something because now what they're dealing with is affecting your immediate home. If it's not, and you just feel like, wow, this is mad dysfunctional and these people are really dealing with it, I would kind of tread lightly because, again, like I said, mental health is a really real thing. And just kind of like, just kind of watch and see. And, in your heart and in your gut when it's a good time to say something and when you're like, you know what, I don't even want to fight this battle. So it's kind of hard because I don't really know the gist. I mean, it's kind of general. It's a great question because I feel like a lot of families are dealing with it. A lot of in-laws deal with stuff like that. Although I am a therapist counselor, but my faith really is kind of my foundation for counseling too. And so I do pray a lot. And sometimes even when meeting with a counselee, I tend to tap into my faith to kind of give what would you want someone to do for you if you were in that situation? Putting yourself in that person's situation, like, would you want an in-law to say something to you? Or would you feel like, you know what, this is a family thing and I just married into the family, so they should stay out. So a lot of factors, but I feel like either way you approach it or either way you try to handle the situation, it can turn into something positive.
Right. Okay.
Or it might be a lesson you learn that, okay, I tried it, it backfired, no, I won't do that again.
Right. There surprisingly, with there's a an actress. Her name goes by Jennifer Lewis. She's on Blackish, and she's made. She's been through some things and has written a book. But recently, she was in an interview, just talking about the industry and the challenges that she was having in it and her wake-up call. And she wrapped up her story as saying the challenges, of course, is if you've been standing in crap long enough, you get used to the smell. And with what you were saying, I completely agree that you need to that, or this couple needs to come together and figure out what's the best course of action. Because at the end of the day, those two got to be with one another, if it's them or maybe for their kids. So I definitely think that's sound advice that regarding the situation. I've got another question, since we're going to get a little bit deeper, and this is about a family, and this is a very interesting situation. It's pretty lengthy, but I'm going to try to sum this up as best as I can. So, a wife has been with her husband for over 20 years and feels she has been a trophy wife. She has not felt love from her husband, and she has expressed it. That's where the conversation gets a little iffy because, in the context of the way she wrote it, it did not come across that she was very direct. But she's expressed her feelings to her husband, and her feelings have not been heard, and so she just feels like she's this trophy wife that gets used for his bidding, and then he goes, and she's just there to take care of the children, take care of the home, but she is not happy. Recently, she has found happiness in somebody else. Is that a crossroads of staying with her family or leaving for love? Unfortunately, her daughter may have started putting the pieces together that there is somebody else, and they are now covered in a lie to cover their tracks, but they're still at this crossroads of do I stay with the family or do I leave for love? So I pose a question to you from looking on the outside in. where do they even begin to possibly salvage this relationship?
I'm not sure. No, I'm just like, okay, that's the first thing. When I think about it, I think about what she's saying. She's saying that I've been married for 20 years, I've been this trophy wife, and I don't feel appreciated by my husband. And so what I hear her saying is, I want to feel appreciated. And so if it can't get to a point where she can go to her husband and say, hey, you don't appreciate me. I need you to appreciate me because I'm feeling unappreciated and I'm feeling like used, that I'm only here to look good and for your good pleasure. I think that's where it starts first. In marriage, and just as a disclaimer, I'm not married. However, I do feel that God's given me a lot of wisdom in the area. It's not fit to say it boastfully. He has. And I tend to only give advice about marriage that I would want someone to give me if I were in a tough situation like this writer. In a marriage is about being selfless. You not lose yourself, but you now come into a marriage from being single, of thinking of yourself, to now, okay, I got to think of somebody else. And we're just going to call a spade. It's like your job is to meet the needs and please your husband. Husband's job is to meet the needs and please the wife. And so if that is not happening, yes, that's where you get the breakdown. That's where you get, I feel unappreciated, overlooked, and I just feel like you're using me as like this trophy wife, use me and abuse me and then just push me to the side. So I think that's where they have to start first. Like, have they communicated? I'm sure she's communicated this to him, but has he really taken the time out to listen to her and listen to what she's saying and listen to her express these needs? Have they sat with a counselor to talk about this? Because one thing I feel is so important, and not just in a marriage, but just relationships with people. Think about a friendship. I don't think someone can be friends. You know, I had a friend for 20 years, so I'm that person's friend, and we've been friends for 20 years, and the 20 years that we've been friends, they've mistreated me. No, you don't have a friendship for that long if one person is mistreating the other. You have a friendship that long because the one person knows about their friend, knows their likes, knows their dislikes, answers the phone when they're in need. When they go through the breakup, the friend is there. What the one friend does for the other is they meet the need. That's why they are friends. That's why some people are best friends. And it's the same thing with the marriage. My husband meets my needs. And because he meets my needs, I want to meet his needs because I want him to be happy. Because I want to keep him doing what he's doing to make me happy. So when you look at it, it's like this ping pong back and forth. You meet my needs, I'm excited, I'm happy. Guess what? I'm going to meet your needs right back. And really, it's that whole concept of what marriage really is about. It's about two selfish people who are selfishly single coming together to say, you know what? I'm leaving my selfish side behind to be selfless and to take care of you and to be here for you. So I feel like that would be her first line of business. Because of that void of the 20% that she's not getting from her husband, because I'm sure he is taking care of her. He's probably paying the bills. He's probably taking care of the kids because men are natural providers. So he's probably like, look, the family's okay. The house is great. She's driving a nice car. She has nice clothes. In his mind, he's probably thinking, this is what I'm doing for you. You should be straight. But there's that 20% that she's not getting, which unfortunately she is now found in this other person. And it feels good. Because she hasn't been getting it, so now it feels, it's like, wow, I've never experienced this with my husband, but this person is giving me exactly what I need.
I agree.
And that's a dangerous place to be. I will
agree.
Say that. So I don't know if I answered the question, but I feel like if she's saying where to start, it's really with the relationship she has with her husband. Like, because now you have children, and now you have children who are on, like, kids are smart, so now they're onto the fact of somebody else has your attention, but, you know, what about daddy? And that could cause a lot of issues psychologically with your children. I mean, you know, think about the divorce rate in the United States and think about the products of divorce. Children who grow up to be adults who have issues because they never dealt with the fact that mom and dad were divorced when I was 13 years old. They go through this trauma in a divorce. So that's where I think she should start.
I think you're right. From you know, reading the letter, I think that's the concern. It's not really even the husband. It's the kids. I think she's worried about if she leaves her love, you know, what about my kids? Am I now going to, will my kids be scarred or have this mental trauma because mommy left daddy and never really explained why she was leaving? Nor would, should she feel they have to understand why mommy is leaving? So, I think the adults in this situation need to have, as we like to say, coming home to Jesus meeting real soon. Real soon. Well, I usually start this at the beginning of the conversation, but just jumping in this with you, it felt so just right on time, and this conversation is going great. But I do want to say, look, I have Geraldine Ismay. She is considered a psychotherapist, a counselor, a mental health counselor. She is all the above. Her area has been family and relationships, and our topic today is about mental health. But I did not ask the question, Geraldine, as to what led you down this path of wanting to be a counselor for mental health.
To be honest, God actually led me down this path. I ran from it. There was a point in time in my life where I wanted to be a nurse. And when I didn't get into a nursing program in college, I was like, well, I'm going to be a computer whiz, and failed out of all my computer classes in college. And I was like, well, I'm going to be a pediatrician. Don't like science. It kind of fell in my lap at a certain point in time where I was like, all right, well, I'm just going to graduate with a psychology degree, and then I'm going to go get a master's in human service administration because I want to do HR and I want to work in a hospital. And the whole time, my mom is like, no, you need to go to counseling, counseling, counseling. So long story short, I ended up taking a detour, and it has led me back to counseling. I mean, I had friends in college who had situations and issues they would come to me with, and I'd be like, but why are you coming to me? Like, I've never been in a relationship, and I don't know how to deal with a cheating boyfriend, and I don't know anything about family. My parents are fighting, and my parents, but they would come to me with these stuff, with these questions and situations. And just honestly, I would always give advice that I would want somebody else to give me if I were in that situation. So I always looked at that as my foundation. Like, you know, if I were in that person's shoes, what would I want to hear that would help me? And that's kind of fostered the whole counseling thing. And I was very interested in marriage and how a marriage works, because, you know, I saw some dysfunctional marriages, and then I saw some really great, great marriages that I admired. And I just thought, okay, well, how come everybody doesn't have these great marriages? And, you know, I researched, and it intrigued me. So,
well, that is a wonderful, you're already on a wonderful path, and the knowledge that you continually give, not just here, but on your Instagram and Facebook pages, of you giving people motivational speeches and thoughts for the day, is truly inspiring. But there's a saying that I recently heard, which is, you know, your life changes when you change a life. And in my book, Transparency, I've always said, you know, no one has a heaven or hell to put you in, as long as you continue to face yourself in the morning in that mirror. But I know along your journey, there probably has been either one or two transparent moments that have stuck out to you that let you know that you were on the right path.
Oh, wow. I think one would be, and that's a really good question. I think one would be, I worked a little bit, a couple years in therapeutic foster care. with kids who had to be separated from their homes for whatever reason, a number of reasons. And I worked in therapeutic foster care, and there was a moment in time where the only clients I would have would be males, like boys. And in my mind, I thought, you know what, I'm a counselor. I should be a counselor for girls, like girl power. But for some reason, for the first year working at that place, all males. My youngest was 11, my oldest was 19, and just for that whole year, boys. And I'm like, I would counsel them, and I'd be like, well, I have no idea what this boy is going through, because I'm not a boy. Like, send me some girls. And when I did have girls to counsel, there was a disconnect. And I think that was one of the moments where I was like, okay, God has given you this gift. It isn't yours. It's a gift that he gave. And maybe there's something in me, a nurturing factor in me, that has to, for this season in my life, I have to counsel boys. And that was like kind of like the pivotal ding. Like, don't force something that God is saying, no, I need you to do this, and you're forcing yourself to do that. And honestly, like, every time I got a female counselee, a teenage girl, I was like, yes, this is great. And I had the worst time, and it would be so challenging because the girls were just so challenging at that moment in time. But I found great reward in working with the boys. Like I said, my first counselee, he was 11. I stopped counseling him when he was 18 years old. So we spent a good amount of time together during those years. And he actually said to me one day, his last day, he was like, you know what? I want to thank you, because when I first started with him, he didn't talk for the first 6 months. So we would meet for a counseling session, and he would not say one mumbling word to me. And it frustrated me. But then after we built that rapport, he's now 18, and he's coming to me, and he's saying, you know, I think I'm good now. Thank you for the years you spent with me. I don't think I need a counselor anymore. And I respected that so much that I was like, you know what? You're right. So it's like moments like that that make me say, okay, I'm going to take my hands off it, God, and I'm going to let you lead me where you need me to go.
We're going to stop right here for today. There's so much more that we get into. So stay tuned for next week's episode, where we're going to get into being a man, counseling men, and should a man be in the household to raise his children? Stay tuned for next week's episode. I want to thank you guys again for tuning in. Every week I'm actually trying to get better, to present you guys something that is from the heart, more importantly, that you can relate to. Now, Gary Vee says it best, so I'm going to quote him. Sharing these thoughts is like oxygen to me. So if they resonate with you, if you feel that this can benefit somebody, subscribe, share, more importantly, like all my platforms, Instagram, Facebook, thealiveexperienceonline.com. And I look forward to speaking and sharing with you guys real soon. Be well.